United Methodists are the third largest Christian denomination in the U.S., and they have a massive footprint around the world. But in a move announced last week, the church could splinter off into two, with some United Methodists looking to be more open to gay marriage and LGBTQ clergy, and other conservative members remaining opposed to both. The plan will get a vote at the church's worldwide conference in May, and church leaders expect it to pass. But now there are big questions about the future of the church and what comes next. Ryan Burge is an assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University. He focuses on the intersection of religion and political behavior. Ryan, good to have you back on Central Time.
Thanks so much.
Was this news that church leaders had agreed to a plan that could eventually split the denomination a surprise to you?
It was, because they actually were meeting in secret for the last couple of months. I mean, there was a small group of about 16 or 18 members of the United Methodist Church from all over the world came together and met in Washington, D.C., completely confidential meetings. They had a very contentious meeting just a couple of months ago in St. Louis where they were going to vote as a national conference whether to move ahead with a more progressive stance on same-sex marriage. And the vote was very, very close. I think it was like 52-48, somewhere in there. And they voted to stay with the traditional stance on marriage, which is between one man and one woman. And that had put the conference, the entire church, on a really collision course where something was going to have to happen in the next couple of years for them to go one way or another. And, you know, I think it's sort of a relief for a lot of United Methodists that they actually were meeting in secret and they did come to an agreement on this plan.
Walk us through what the split, if it is approved, would look like.
Yeah. So this is it's very important when we talk about United Methodists. They are a very top down or hierarchical style of church, which means that almost every church that is a United Methodist church is actually not owned by the local church at the local level. The deed is actually owned by the United Methodist Church at the national level. They're also a church where they can the national office can actually determine who your pastor is going to be and if you change pastors or not. So that is it's a very hierarchical denomination in the fact that the local church has less say than, let's say, like in the Baptist or other evangelical churches. So the way this is going to work is that every church is going to have a vote in the next year or so, and that vote is simply going to be, are we going to break away from the United Methodist Church and join what's called the more traditional churches and start a new denomination, or are we as a church going to vote to stay as United Methodists and then possibly, potentially accepting a more affirming or liberal view on gay marriage? So every church is going to have to decide. Now, there is some discussion that these decisions will not actually be made at the local church level. They'll actually be made at the conference level. The United Methodist Church has these conferences all over, and that these conferences will make it sort of for a bunch of churches at one time. So maybe it won't be voting at the local level, but definitely voting at the conference level on what to do.
And just to be clear, is this affecting just the U.S. or this is the worldwide United Methodists?
So the International United Methodist Church is much more conservative on same-sex marriage. So the thought is that they will be joining this new denomination, this splinter group or this new offshoot of the United Methodist Church. Also, interestingly enough, as part of this deal, this new denomination will get about $25 million in seed money over the next couple of years from the United Methodist Church today to allow them to set up a whole administration and an organization going forward. And in these churches, especially in Africa, which is where the United Methodist Church has seen a lot of growth, will more than likely become part of this new offshoot denomination that's going to crop up in the next few years.
Is there any kind of a timeline being looked at right now? Yeah. If this split is approved, this is not a simple or fast process, I would think.
No. I think I saw the last opportunity a church, this is all going, they have a couple years to vote actually, and the separation might not be all the way complete until late into 2024. So this might be in total almost a five-year process of a church splitting up. But the alternative was these churches fighting amongst one another, maybe conferences fighting against other conferences, who's going to leave and who's going to stay. And those kind of lawsuits, the court system drags out forever, and that could have lasted a decade or more. So this is actually a short timeline considering what the alternative was.
We said that the United Methodists are the third largest Christian denomination in the U.S. Can you put some numbers to that for us?
Yeah, so if we think about Protestant Christianity, really the Southern Baptists are the largest established denomination. It depends on who you talk to and how you measure things, but somewhere between 18 and 20 million Americans are Southern Baptists. Now, the United Methodists are just a touch smaller than that. Again, depending on how you want to count attendance versus membership, maybe 15 or 16 million. However, there's a bigger story going on in Protestant Christianity, which is that non-denominational Christians are now 23% of all Protestants in America. They actually might be larger than United Methodists or Southern Baptists. So the United Methodist Church is very large, but here's a really interesting fact about the United Methodists. While the Southern Baptists are really geographically concentrated, typically in the South and even in the Midwest, a demographer once told me there's a United Methodist Church in every single county in the United States. So it is the most geographically dispersed church we have in America.
Wow, that's a very interesting fact right there. We're talking with Ryan Burge right now. He's assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University. We are talking about the potential split within the United Methodist Church over LGBTQ rights, and also looking at other faith communities and denominations and how that issue is playing out there. Now, Ryan, one of the events that precipitated this potential split was a special session of the United Methodists General Conference held last year. What happened there?
It was contentious, to say the least. The United Methodists have this really interesting dynamic where most of the money that funds the church comes from American churches, but most of the growth that's happening in the United Methodist Church is happening in churches overseas, specifically in Southeast Asia and in Africa. Those churches don't donate much, but they're growing very rapidly, and obviously the American churches want to help spur that growth. So when they went to vote, there was a question of how much representation the Americans should get versus the Africans or the Southeast Asians should get, for instance. And there were even some discussions and some controversy after the meeting was over that some people voted in the meeting who actually didn't have full voting rights. And really, I think what this agreement they came up to in the last couple of months was really a way to sidestep all those issues about voting rights and having another conference and having this thing drag on and on and on, and coming to the realization that something had to happen, you know, dramatically and significantly for everyone involved in the United Methodist Church to sort of move beyond this conflict and move on and grow in their own separate ways.
Ryan, I think one of the really interesting elements of this is with this split, you talked about, you know, one group going off as a splinter or becoming a new denomination, basically, and one staying. And it's a very interesting dynamic of who gets to stay and keep that kind of mantle and who is kind of the renegade.
Yeah, so legality is very interesting here, because let's say a church has 2,000 – this actually happened to a church in Falls Church, Virginia, a very wealthy upper middle class community. One of the liberal churches, I think it was either Episcopal or United Church of Christ, had a 2,000 member church, and like 3/4 of the membership wanted to move in a more conservative direction, and about 500 people wanted to stay in a more liberal direction. And what eventually happened was those 1,500 people actually had to leave their church and start a new church in a different location, because the law says the original church is the original church, and they have all rights to all assets, both liquid and tangible. So they own the building, they own all the accounts, all the endowments and everything else. So if you want to leave a church and start a new church, you have no legal rights or responsibilities to any of the debts, assets, or buildings that were part of the original denomination that you were a part of.
Let's look at some more of the divides here, because you talked about the fact that there's more money in the U.S., but the growing membership and attendance is in Asia and Africa. What about when you look at the age of the members of this community, or for instance, education level?
Yeah, so the United Methodists are part of, just to put this in a larger American context, the United Methodist Church is the largest mainline church in America. And mainline churches used to be the sort of more moderate flavor of American Protestant Christianity. They were like the Episcopalians and the United Church of Christ and the United Methodists and the PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA. And the United Methodist Church sort of over time has become a church of older, more educated white people. And they're typically very strong in places like New England, where we have sort of an aging population. The modal age of a United Methodist, which is the age that shows up the most in the data for United Methodists, is 66 years old. The average age is over 60 years old now. So they're a denomination that's declining because they're getting older. But here's the other big thing that's going on. The mainline church in 1976 was 30% of the American population, and now they're down to 10% of the American population, and they're declining rapidly. So this growth in Asia and Africa for them is a huge boon, because without them, the church would be on a trajectory towards, you know, complete annihilation in 20 or 30 years, and this gives them some sort of hope. However, this gay marriage thing is sort of looming over all this problem as something they had to resolve.
This would be a huge move if the vote is to separate. Do we know how kind of rank and file United Methodists say how important this issue of gay marriage and gay clergy is to them?
Well, that's a really hard question to take a look at. I looked at some survey data, and they asked people 15 different questions about how much you care about different issues that are both political and religious, things like crime and immigration and taxes and jobs and Social Security. But they also asked about abortion and gay marriage. And out of 15 issues, gay marriage ranked 15th in importance, and abortion actually ranked 14th in importance. At least in the political sphere. Now, in the religious sphere, obviously issues like this kind of take more precedent. For a lot of Americans, though, especially a lot of younger Americans and even younger United Methodists, gay marriage is sort of an issue that's – we've moved beyond that. I have data that says that for United Methodists under the age of 35, 80% of them are in favor of gay marriage, and even going up to 60 to 75-year-olds, 57.9% are in favor. So the vast majority of United Methodists are in favor of supporting gay marriage.
We're talking to Ryan Burge right now. He's an assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University, and he works on the intersection between religion and political behavior. And we're talking about a deal within the United Methodist Church that's expected to split the denomination over the issue of gay marriage and gay clergy. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you make of this proposal that was negotiated by leaders of the United Methodist Church? Are you a member of the church yourself? If so, what do you want to see happen when the church votes on this plan in May? And especially if you're an LGBTQ member of the United Methodist Church, how is all of this news resonating with you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation here on Central Time after this short break. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're picking up our conversation with Ryan Burge, an expert on religion and politics from Eastern Illinois University. And he's with us to talk about a plan that could break up the United Methodist Church over LGBTQ issues. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's a good idea to split the denomination over this or for any issue? Or do you think the church should try to remain together and resolve its disagreements? If you're a person of any faith, how are you seeing LGBTQ issues play out in your religion? And if you're an LGBTQ person of faith, call in and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Ryan, we've been talking pretty exclusively about the United Methodist Church right now, but I want to look at other denominations. This issue of gay marriage, gay clergy is certainly not unique to the United Methodists. What have we seen in other faith communities?
So in 2005, the first church, United Church of Christ, actually allowed same-sex marriage, and other mainline churches like the Episcopal Church, for example, have allowed same-sex marriage. But generally, the issue is that the two largest kinds of Christianity in America are Catholicism and Evangelical Protestantism. Both traditions have no leniency for gay marriage. So we won't be seeing the Catholic Church be doing any gay weddings in the future. However, the majority of rank and file Catholics are totally okay with gay marriage. On the other hand, evangelicals, Southern Baptists, non-denominational Protestants are strongly opposed to gay marriage. 60 to 70%, depending on how you want to look at it, are opposed to same-sex marriage. So, and we have not seen any movement among those churches in terms of becoming more permissive towards same-sex marriage.
And you yourself are a member of the American Baptist Church. You're actually a minister, if I remember correctly.
Correctly.
Has this been an issue in your community?
And not in our community specifically, but it's been an issue. See, Baptist polity is a lot different than United Methodist policy because we are a very bottom-up denomination. So really everything happens at the local church level. We have complete autonomy over what we do at the local church level. So if my church wanted to marry same-sex couples, we could totally do that. If another church does not want to have anything to do with gay people, they can also do that. The issue, though, is that people want our national office to take a stand and tell churches what they can and can't do. And when they respond by saying, well, we can't do that, that's a violation of Baptist beliefs, then churches leave because they don't want to be associated with churches from the other side of the issue. So really, it's a terrible spot to be in if you're at the national office, because you're going to make people mad whether you do something or whether you do nothing. And we've actually had churches leave their region and go to a different region geographically, even though they haven't moved their building, because they wanted to be in a region that was more liberal on things like same-sex marriage. So it's caused some churches to leave for sure, but it's also sort of made some churches more committed to our denomination as a whole.
You study religion and you study politics, and it seems like public opinion really kind of exploded in favor of gay rights and gay marriage and the side issue of gay clergy and faith communities pretty rapidly. There was a big change socially and politically. It seems to me that faith communities are often much slower in those evolutions.
That's exactly right. I think gay marriage to me is one of the most interesting issues in the history of public opinion research. In 1988, just 12% of Americans were in favor of same-sex marriage. 12%, 30 years ago, and now it's 66%. It's just amazing to me that, you know, like half the population changed their mind on gay marriage since 1988. But you are right. I mean, churches by and large are sort of behind the cultural shift, and they've been that way for a long time, because you have to think about what a church is. It's typically, especially in America, gotten older, gotten grayer. But who's your donor base? It's typically your older members, your more faithful members, who are typically more conservative on issues, you know, social issues, and gay marriage is one of those social issues. So, you know, a lot of churches, a lot of pastors are very reluctant to speak out on this issue because they might alienate the people that are literally keeping the lights on and the doors open every Sunday.
We're talking with Ryan Burge right now about a potential split in the United Methodist Church over the issue of gay marriage and gay clergy. We're also looking at how that may or may not play out in other denominations. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. And certainly this is not the first or last contentious issue within faith communities that could potentially create rifts and even splits like we're talking about. Historically, Ryan, are there other churches that have had splits or serious breaks because of other contentious social issues?
Oh, I mean, the one that comes to mind, obviously, is slavery. I mean, I'm part of the American Baptist Church, which used to be called the Northern Baptist Convention, and we were an offshoot of the Southern Baptist Convention. And our church was started by a bunch of abolitionists who didn't want to be joined together with a bunch of Baptist slave owners from the South. The Free Methodist Church and the United Methodist Church divided over the exact same issue. There were a lot of people 10 years ago who said that gay marriage was going to be the, you know, the sort of the evolution of this slavery issue. Churches split over it in the 1860s, and churches are going to split over it in the 21st century. And as it goes so far, this is the largest and clearest indication that that's going to happen, that we're going to see more denominational splits going forward over the issue of gay marriage, with traditionalists wanting to go their own way and more liberal people wanting to go the other way.
Do you see any current social issues that might be a little earlier in that evolution that we talked about in the larger society that could have this kind of weight within faith communities in the future?
I don't know if there's any issue that's as widespread of importance as gay marriage is. The one that's sort of on the edges are things like transgender rights. There's been a lot of discussion about transgender rights recently, but a lot of churches really don't have any sort of direct contact with transgender people for, you know, a whole bunch of geographic and self-selection reasons and things like that. I think the one that's sort of on the edge, and this is something that's sort of burbling up and amongst evangelicals, is the issue of women as pastors, because most of those churches don't allow women to preach on Sunday, but they do allow women to do other leadership things. And there's sort of a creeping move towards allowing women to do more and more. And I actually wrote a piece for Religion News Service a couple months ago where I show that 2/3 of Southern Baptist women want women to be pastors. And I wonder how long the Southern Baptist Convention is going to be able to sort of hold back against that groundswell of allowing, you know, egalitarianism in the pulpit every Sunday morning. So that actually might become an issue in future years, is allowing women to have full rights and full responsibilities in the church as men do.
And Ryan, it's very interesting to me that this split is actually being proposed and I don't want to say encouraged, but facilitated. Whereas when there have been movements within, say, the Catholic Church, they are quashed pretty effectively. Is this surprising to you that they are taking this move in what seems to be a relatively peaceful way?
You know, I was reading about Ken Feinberg, and he's the guy who mediated this whole dispute. Ken Feinberg is actually a really interesting character. He's the guy who was asked by George W. Bush to divvy up the 9/11 victims fund to all the victims' families of people who died in 9/11. He also did the same for the Deepwater Horizon. He also did the same for the Boston Massacre, the bombing after the Boston Marathon, I mean, to give that money out. So he's probably the world-class mediator when it comes to stuff like this. And he gave an interview today, and he said, "I went to the table, and here's what I said. Your alternative to coming to a good resolution here is going to be much worse than whatever we decide right here. So the incentive structure now is for us to come to an amicable agreement, because the alternative is for us to literally spend decades in the courtroom trying to figure this out. And this is a much better out, a much better option for everyone involved in the United Methodist Church." And I think a lot of them really heard that and really bought into the fact that they need to figure something out. And they might not love the outcome, but they're going to like that outcome a lot more than they're going to like being in court for a decade.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Been my pleasure.
That was Ryan Burge. He's an assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University. He specializes in religion and political behavior. He was with us today to talk about a plan that could eventually split the United Methodist Church into two, one that would seek to remove a ban on same-sex marriages and gay clergy, and another that would continue to bar both. The vote to decide on that plan is scheduled for May.